couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, The Twin, Escape the Field, Strange New Worlds, and To Mom and Dad with Love. I'm also going to be talking about the news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring Friend of the World. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
I haven't even really talked about this because it's frustrating and stupid, and it's celebrity gossip and everything that's wrong with society at this time, not just what's going on with it, but the public reaction to it, and that is the very high-profile defamation trial between Johnny Depp and Amber Heard. I'm not even really paying close attention. Most of the stuff I'm seeing on it is stuff that I'm seeing peripherally. People are posting things on Facebook. People are posting memes and they're posting clips. And I've watched some of them, but I gotta admit, I am not heavily following this. The reality is celebrities are just like us. They just oftentimes have the finances to be weird. I mean, imagine if you had millions of dollars, you probably could do some pretty strange things, but you know, most of us have to work for a living and keep in our own lane, so to speak. But here's the thing. I find it fascinating that people feel 100% in support of Johnny Depp or 100% in support of Amber Heard. The reality, and isn't this possible, that maybe they're both severely problematic. Isn't it quite possible that this is just a toxic dumpster fire of a relationship and you're seeing it all fall apart in a very public setting? I'm seeing some women out there who are saying, always believe the woman. I actually know somebody who I just saw post today that 100% behind Amber Heard. Oh, you know, always believe the woman. And I'm like, I literally know women who have lied about this kind of stuff. People will lie. Men do not have a corner in the market about lying. Or abuse for that matter. But here's the thing that you got to remember. They're in a defamation suit. It's not a criminal trial. And I've heard people worry publicly. They say, well, this is going to cause anybody who receives some sort of accusation to sue them. And I'm like, well, there's a difference. And here's the big difference between filing charges for assault and going out in a public forum and trying to actually ruin people's career, which we saw in the wake of the Me Too movement. I mean, there are people like Aziz Ansari. I talked about this on the show several years ago. He got swept up in a Me Too scandal that really wasn't, it turned out it never really blew back on him because he certainly didn't do anything criminal. It just may have been a little bit smarmy, but you know, it's the, what happens is you see these people post these stories online in an effort to destroy somebody's career or smear them publicly. And that is literally what defamation does. Just because, even if you had a toxic relationship and just because you feel like you've been wrong does not mean you can go out and publicly defame somebody. That is what defamation suits are about. That is what libel is about. And it looks to me like what's going on with Johnny Depp and Amber Heard is they're both kind of monsters in their own rights. Seriously, have you ever known people in a toxic relationship? Have you ever known people that are always fighting and causing problems for each other? I know people like that. And it is never like one person's totally innocent and the other person's a monster. It's usually two people who are volatile, who get together and cause problems for each other. Let's get rid of Johnny Depp and Amber Heard for a minute and talk about the box office last weekend. The Bad Guys topped it again. We had pretty much the same little rundown of movies, but Bad Guys topped it with $16 million, which only was about 30% down, which is a good drop, but that still means it only made about $50 million in 2 weeks. That's not a huge, massive hit. It just overperformed. Memory came in eighth place with like $3 million, and that could have been a result of Liam Neeson fatigue. I think that has a lot to do with it. But it's also not necessarily a movie that cries out to be seen in theaters, whereas like the Doctor Strange movie this weekend, that's a movie that you're going to want to see in theaters. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is Easter Sunday, which comes in theaters nowhere near Easter Sunday on August 5th.
Father and son road trip.
It's going to be fun. Easter Sunday is like the Filipino Super Bowl.
I've literally never seen this many Filipinos in the same place before.
We're sending gifts to our family in the Philippines.
I'm sending this brand new hair dryer.
If it makes your hair look like that, I wouldn't send it.
How dare you?
How dare you?
Family is a mess.
We're counting on you to fix it.
Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're all we got. So let's get the party started.
This is a vehicle for Joe Coy, who is a comedian. He's been around for 10, 20 years. And he does a lot of racial comedy because he's Asian Pacific Islander. And this movie is about his family. And one of the things that does sort of make me roll my eyes a little bit, it's clearly trying to glom onto the success of something like Crazy Rich Asians, because it's really focusing on the cultural element of his family. But on the same token, I do watch this and I'm like, oh, Filipino families always fight. And I'm like, are you kidding me? What family doesn't? Come to my Hungarian side of the family and see people fight. I mean, that happens. It's, look, you know, no culture has a lock on the infighting during family functions. So, I mean, this looks funny. It looks like it's an offshoot of Joe Coy's comedy. And that's cool. I mean, but it also looks a little weird that in the trailer, he's doing stand-up within the show. Like, that's what he uses. He's using a microphone to almost do stand up in front of his family and in front of a church. It just, at a certain point, that you need to not make the movie so much about the individual personality and break it off and have him play a character. The next one I want to talk about is Don't Worry, Darling, which comes to theaters on September 23rd.
Welcome to the Victory Project. We're all here because we believe in the mission.
What are we doing?
Changing the world.
What are we doing?
Changing the world.
That's right.
What do you think they're really doing out there?
What do you mean?
Do you even know what the Victory Project actually is? Have you ever asked?
Do you?
This is Olivia Wilde's latest directorial effort. She made a big splash with Booksmart a couple years ago, and that was a good movie, but it was a much more practical film. This one has some thriller elements, you know, some psychological horror to it. It's about a woman who's losing touch with reality in her 1950s housewife era of life. And it does feel like it's drawing a bit from some of the feelings we got in watching Last Night in Soho. But the one thing I do worry about is that this might be overdone, because this is a jump from a pragmatic film to something a little more surreal, it looks like. So I just hope that they didn't throw more money at Olivia Wilde and then she kind of tries to tackle something she's not quite ready for, which is exactly what Ava DuVernay did when she went from doing something like Selma to doing A Wrinkle in Time. And that's part of the reason why I think she abandoned doing Black Panther, because maybe the big budgeted movies aren't for her with Olivia Wilde. I mean, that's not as big of a stair step, but you know, hopefully, and I look forward to it. I want to see what she's doing. But I mean, she might be venting her spleen at marriage as well. You know, of course, we all heard the story about how she was served divorce papers from Jason Sudeikis when she was premiering this trailer. But the other thing I'm interested in seeing, I'm very interested to see what happens with the Florence Pugh stands out there, because there's this bizarre stalker-ish fandom for Florence Pugh. And there's no sense of humor or sense of scale with that. And I think Florence Pugh's a very good actress, and I'm very interested in her career, but she's hardly a lister quite yet. She's still on her way up. She's not somebody you can put on a poster and have that recognizable box office come from it. But we'll see. Maybe the stands are going to dial back, but they probably won't with this movie. That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Two Mom and Dad with Love and the Twin.
Thank you.
to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the new films and kick things off with another episode from Peanuts. It's on Apple TV Plus. It's called To Mom and Dad with Love. Peppermint Patty struggles to cope with everyone celebrating Mother's Day when she doesn't have one herself.
The line at the candy store sure was backed up due to Mother's Day tomorrow.
I can't believe I almost forgot Mother's Day.
We got my mom an ice cream cake for Mother's Day.
Apparently Mother's Day is not her favorite holiday.
I don't know why you're so upset.
Because you miss your mom?
I never had a mom.
Maybe you miss what moms do.
My dad does all that mom stuff for me.
For Mother's Day, I'm going to celebrate my dad.
First of all, before I actually get into the nuts and bolts of the story and the special itself, I love the fact that Apple TV Plus is putting out new Peanuts content. And they're doing it very much in the spirit of the original Peanuts animated series. I talked about this when I did the one a couple weeks ago, the one that had to deal with Earth Day. Much like that, when it feels like it was designed in the heyday of Peanuts. You got to remember that the original Peanuts special was the Charlie Brown Christmas back in the late 50s. And then through the 60s and 70s were all the classics, stuff like The Great Pumpkin and The Easter Beagle and all that kind of stuff. And I remember as a kid, that was always a big deal to have a Peanuts special. And even though they've done other Peanuts content, these specials were always the anchor. It never devolved into a really crappy TV series that then overshadowed the standalone specials. And I mean, although they've shown up in multiple formats, there's a purity to those Peanuts specials, and that works because when you're six, it doesn't matter what era you grew up with. If you grew up in the 50s, you can still relate. I grew up in the 70s, and I could still relate to all the stuff from the Peanuts in the 50s, even though there's elements that didn't exist anymore. So I love the fact that they're preserving the style of these. And this one in particular is about Mother's Day. You know, of course, Mother's Day is this weekend. And it focuses on Peppermint Patty because, and I didn't know this, I did not realize this in terms of the canon of the characters. Peppermint Patty, her mother, apparently, the character in the history of Peanuts as a whole, her mother had passed away and she lives with her dad. So it's her dealing with the fact that she doesn't have a mother, or she had a mother and the mother's gone, and she feels left out for Mother's Day. And I think that's a very valid thing to approach for kids, because if you either parents are divorced or you don't have a mom, or, you know, for whatever reason, if you don't have a mother in the picture, it can be a little bit stressful for a kid to deal with that. It's sort of like, do you know all those people that aren't in relationships who hate Valentine's Day? Well, imagine that as a kid, but it's about something you have no control over, and that being whether or not you have a mom. And even though she finally says something in the special, she's like, well, my dad likes stuff like sports and flannel and cars and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, wow, you know, a billion piece jigsaw puzzle just fell completely into place in terms of Peppermint Patty's character. But you know, it's really sweet and tender because it does give the authentic version of what Peppermint Patty would do, because Peppermint Patty's not a girly girl. And Peppermint Patty is not going to want to openly cry, and Peppermint Patty is still going to have emotion. And I think they handle that really well. And again, in that framework of, it doesn't matter that this would be taking place in 2022, or it could be taking place in 1955, because they're not overly reliant on technology or modern elements to tell the story of a bunch of kids playing baseball and football with their friends. So I really enjoyed this. I thought this was very, very sweet and exactly the kind of peanut special I grew up with. So I'm going to say To Mom and Dad with Love, totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Another Mother's Day adjacent story we've got is The Twin, a thriller. It's on the Shudder Network. After the death of one of her children, a couple moves to Finland for a fresh start, but face a potential haunting.
Why'd we leave Nick there in the ground?
We didn't leave him.
He is always with us.
Hey. Who are you talking to?
Haven't you noticed anything odd with his behavior since we've been here?
Your son has made a wish, and it has been granted.
This stars Teresa Palmer as this mother who is crushed with grief because her son got killed in a car crash. And the twin, who's now left alone, they're having trouble sort of rebuilding their life and getting back on their feet. And they moved to Finland, the father's family's from Finland. But it's this old area of Finland, and it's sort of in the woods. And they've been in Finland longer than even Christianity has been around. So they've got these pagan roots there. And that's sort of where you're wondering, is it haunted? Is there some sort of a demonic presence there? But it's the woman, played by Teresa Palmer, trying to emotionally recover and take care of her one child while still dealing with the weight of the memory of her other son. And it's a neat idea, and you know, a lot of horror movies will play around with heavy emotions like grief and guilt, and that's where they hang the horror on in this. And they certainly do that, and it's obvious from the beginning. You're like, this movie starts with grief, and so that's going to carry as a through line through the film. There's elements I don't like about it, like the cinematography. Once again, anytime you're inside, it's poorly lit. And I think that that's a cop out. People are going to turn on freaking lights in their house so they can see. So they do fall into that trap. Now, they do have these things where they go outside and they're interacting with people. And it doesn't do it at the level that, say, something like Midsommar did, where it took the horror elements and put it in the bright light of day. But it does have some disturbing things. But you also have that cold, stark winter of the emotions of the season pushing down on it. But the one problem I had with, and I've complained about other films, like the best one I remember to compare it to is the remake of Pet Sematary back in 2019. That movie started out, and the second they pull up to the house, you're like, do not go in there. It was horrifying. It was the stuff of nightmares the second they showed up. And that's the way it is with this movie. It opens with crushing grief because this woman's lost her son. It's her in this cloud of depression and sadness and worry. And it's so intense with that level of emotion. There's nowhere to go. There's nothing to ramp up to. You know, and that's the thing. Like I said, the original Pet Sematary, for example, they show up at the house and it's nice and idyllic and it's beautiful. And it's, and you're like, oh, this might be a great place to live. Oh, au contraire, it's not because of the Micmac burial ground in the back. But in the remake of Pet Sematary, it was full of dread from frame one. And that's the same thing with this movie. There's nothing to balance it to. And so when she's dealing with the grief and the negative emotions and it's manifesting, you know, you go from like level 90 to 100, you start way too intense. And it just gets exhausting. You kind of get numb to that negative emotion and it loses its effectiveness as a movie. But still, if you can get past that stuff, it's okay. I mean, it's a little bit predictable, but as a, you know, sort of a smaller horror movie, if you want to check that one out, it's on Shudder. I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness and Escape the Field. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the big movie of the weekend, and that is Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. Doctor Strange finds himself traveling to different realities while trying to save the life of a teenage girl with special powers.
The nightmare begins. I did what I had to do. Protect our world.
You cannot control everything, Strange. You opened the doorway between universes, and we don't know who or what will walk through it.
Wanda, what do you know about the multiverse?
Viz had his theories. He believed it was dangerous.
He was right.
With the exception of the Batman, this is going to be the first big hit of 2022. Now, granted, Spider-Man was a big hit, and that spilled over into 2022, that's for sure, but it was a 2021 movie. And what's interesting is, when I came back and after seeing this, I was asked by some people, is it better than No Way Home, Spider-Man No Way Home? And I'm like, it's a different movie. And it really is. Just because it deals with the multiverse does not mean that it's the same kind of movie. Spider-Man No Way Home is very much about Peter Parker and his history. This, while it deals with the multiverse, rather than bringing the multiverse to it, it goes into the multiverse. And it's a journey. It's an absolute journey, not just symbolically for Doctor Strange, but literally as he's going from different reality to different reality. And, you know, it's in that sense, it's also quite different than something like the Everything Everywhere All at Once, which is also a multiverse movie where she's traveling around through it. But that's has a totally different timbre to it. This one, it's directed by Sam Raimi, and you gotta remember, Sam Raimi got his start doing horror movies, in particular, the Evil Dead series, which is full of crazy, over-the-top horror imagery and violence, but it also has this insane slapstick energy that the Three Stooges have. Raimi has been a fan of the Three Stooges for all his life, and that comes across if you've seen especially stuff like Evil Dead, or even more recent stuff, like Drag Me to Hell, which had a real Looney Tunes slapstick and Three Stooges mentality to it. And because quite literally anything goes in this movie, because it's a multiverse where anything can happen, it's open up. And it doesn't reach the conceptual ideas as far flung as Raimi could go, although he touches on a couple of them. He has some fun with it, and it's out there. It's a wild ride. I put it like this. Do you remember there's that scene in the first Doctor Strange when he goes in sort of this astral projection realm, and it's very trippy and psychedelic? That's kind of what this is like. It also offers some insights, not just into what they can do with multiverse and what now Disney can do now that it has the rights to some of the other properties in the Marvel canon because they purchased 20th Century Fox, but it opens up the world. Now, it wouldn't have been able to do this without Spider-Man before it, or without WandaVision, or even without What if you remember that series. Now, you don't have to have seen all of them, but that sets the stage for a lot of this, and you see a lot of these elements coming through. And it's less of a direct sit-around-and-talk-about-it story. Even like Spider-Man No Way Home, it kind of hits the ground running, but you do have the point where you got Peter Parker and his friends trying to figure out what to do. It has that downtime in the beginning. You really don't get that. This thing hits the ground running, and it's dealing with bizarre looking creatures and bizarre effects and very out of the box and horror elements too. I mean, you've got elements of horror in terms of creatures that you see and that they encounter, but you also have horror elements in some of the worlds that they visit and the reality that they visit, where it does feel like they're stepping out of a superhero movie into a horror film, or even just some things that happen to characters. I kind of my jaw dropped and I was like, ooh, I didn't expect to see that coming. That was pretty, not violent for a Marvel movie, but somewhat shocking for a Marvel movie. I mean, there is a level of sorcerer brutality that you see in this that I was not expecting to see. So, I mean, it's really Sam Raimi taking Marvel to a different place. And it's also a different place from his Spider-Man movies he did from Sony 20 years ago. I mean, he is kind of given a loose rein, but there is a story that does follow, but it's kind of buried in there. I've heard some people complain that they say the story elements aren't as good in this one, that it's more of a trippy ride. And I guess they're right, but also the story is told along the line. The story is told within all the craziness. And when you step back, you'd be like, oh, well, there's really most every scene forwards the whole multiverse idea and what they have to do to try and battle that and the issues that are coming out of that. But buried in there is an actual pragmatic story, and I think it's pretty good. And you can draw some symbolism and some reality and some differences that are coming through it, and some real world elements that are buried in there. look, this is a fun movie. It's a wild ride, and it takes a Marvel Universe somewhere it really has never gone before. And I think that's great because it opens up the Marvel Cinematic Universe even wider than it was before. So I'm going to have to say Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
The next movie I want to talk about is Escape the Field. A random group of people wake up in the middle of a never-ending cornfield, and they must figure out a way to escape.
Where am I?
I have no idea. I just woke up in this field. Come on out.
This doesn't make any sense. How did we get here?
What did you find?
Matches.
She's got a knife and a compass.
We need water.
You'd think we'd found something by now.
Come with us. We'll find a way out.
There is no way.
This is a smaller, lower budget movie. It's on VOD right now. It's also in select theaters and a lot of drive-ins around the country. It is a limited story because it has a limited cast of characters. A good chunk of it takes place in this never-ending cornfield. And the best I can describe it in terms of similar films, it reminds me a lot of Cube, if you remember that movie from Vincenzo Natali, who that was, I think, sometime in the late 90s, where these people were trapped in this cube. They didn't know how they get there, and they're trying to find their way out. Now, it's not as esoteric or intelligent as Cube was, but it is the fact that these people are sort of put in this not escape room, but escape world, so to speak. The concept is cool, and it draws, like I said, from Cube, and also a little bit from stuff like Lost. The problem I had with this is the writing just isn't up to snuff. The dialogue between the characters moves too fast. It jumps from not trusting to trusting. They befriend too quickly or not at all. And they have some very cliche elements to it. You know, of course, you got the ex-soldier who's there who doesn't trust everybody, and he's mean and nasty, and he's ready to fight anybody. So the characters aren't terribly well fleshed out. And at times, it feels in a way that its interesting story setup is being squandered for some poor acting and poor delivery choices. But ultimately it is one of those Twilight Zone type of movies where people are put in a bizarre situation and they got to find their way out. But it's also impressive in the fact that it's definitely a low budget movie and they shot it mostly in a field of corn and still managed to make a somewhat compelling thriller sci-fi action piece. So while you can kind of figure out what's going on, except for the stuff that really kind of doesn't even make pragmatic sense, because there's plenty of that in there, I will say that Escape the Field kept my interest, although it just barely got by without overstaying its welcome. But I'll still say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Strange New Worlds and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Friend of the World. To Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the strange stuff and talk about Strange New Worlds. See what I did there? Doctor Strange in the previous segment. Strange New Worlds in this one. Under the command of Christopher Pike, the crew of the Starship Enterprise embark on a voyage of discovery.
No matter how many stars there are in the sky, no matter what the mathematical probabilities or the number of times we say, we are not alone in the universe. Our first visit from the stars is always the province of children's stories and science fiction. Until one day, it isn't.
This is the latest new Star Trek series on Paramount+. It debuted this week, and you're going to get a new episode every Thursday. And it overlapped perfectly with the end of Picard, because the first episode of Strange New Worlds premiered on the same day as the season 2 finale of Picard dropped. And I know that new Trek is very polarizing. There are some people who don't like it at all. And I got to admit, it took me a while to get into Discovery. And while I still don't find Discovery great, I have warmed up to it, especially in its later seasons. I think the first season was its most problematic one. Now, Strange New Worlds takes a lot of the cast members who showed up in season 2 of Discovery. You've got Anson Mount, who plays Christopher Pike. You've got Rebecca Romijn, who plays Number One. You've got Ethan Peck, who played Spock. You've got a new Uhura. You've got a new girl playing Nurse Chapel. And that's disappointing. I wish they would have put Rebecca Romijn as Nurse Chapel as well. Because for those of you who know the casting of the original Star Trek series, Nurse Chapel was played by Majel Barrett, who eventually became Majel Roddenberry. But she also played Number One in the original Star Trek pilot, which had Captain Pike in it. So this is drawing from some characters that have already been established in the new Trek universe and some of the story elements. It takes place after season 2 of Discovery, so you've got the stuff that Captain Pike has learned about himself seeding the stories of this new season. Now, the big difference between this and something like Discovery or Picard is it's trying to return back to the episodic Trek. Both Picard and Discovery have taken this more modern shift of telling a whole story over the course of like 10 episodes. Like this season of Picard was about him traveling in through time to stop a Borg queen from taking over the world. Whereas the old Trek, you know, all the way from the original series and The Next Generation and Deep Space Nine and Voyager and Enterprise, all those different series were a trip to a different planet or a different adversary, and they had to deal with it there. So that was very episodic. And that made sense with the syndicated show, because that's kind of how TV was back then. Now that you've got stuff on streaming, there is no problem and no difficulty watching something in order of the episodes. It's just automated for you. But it does go back to that level of Discovery where they are exploring strange new worlds, seeking out new life and new civilizations, and boldly going where where everybody's gone before, because this is what the 10th season. It's honestly, it is a little bit presumptuous to give us that boldly go where no one's gone before when they've done a dozen series of Star Trek out there. But anyways, I enjoy this one. It's neat because it's got the higher level of production value and the modern special effects. So it has that weight of a very impressive technology and special effects look to it. And it also has some great sets and some great locations. It does have a couple things that do worry me. I think at least the first episode, it's tough to play these learn a lesson type stories without getting preachy, and it just swerves a little too close to it. They also do run into some issues with canon. Like, for example, it opens up in this episode, the first episode, Spock is on Vulcan with his betrothed. And if you've ever seen A Mock Time, the original episode from the first original series where Spock goes to Ponfar and has to go to Vulcan and he has to fight Kirk, they make a big point about how those rituals are shrouded in mystery and they're not for outsiders. Yet Spock's just like, yeah, whatever, I'm with my betrothed and we're going to go have sex now. I mean, it does seem to be a little more cavalier than how it was originally presented. But that's what happens when you have a series that has evolved over the years. And I think that Strange New Worlds is going to be able to hit that sweet spot between the fans of the new Trek, the people who like the new stuff, and that old school Trek fan who wants it to be more like, in particular, the original series or The Next Generation. But it's a hard sell to cater to both those audiences, and it seems to be at least initially walking that fine line, and it is trying to preserve the wonder and exploration and discovery side of Star Trek much more than Discovery itself did in its first season, where it was just trying to ape Star Wars. So I'm going to have to say I'm really looking forward to the rest of Strange New Worlds. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I'm going to say it totally rocks so far.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is going to be on a lesser-known film. It was recommended to me, and you can find it on Prime Video. I think you got to pay a dollar. It's like 99 cents on Prime Video. It's also on the services Tubi, T-U-B-I, Plex, P-E-L-X, and Xumo, X-U-M-O. In the post-apocalypse, a young artist tries to survive in a bunker with a disturbed soldier.
How did you get in here, kid?
I don't know why I'm here. I don't know what's happening. Everyone's gone.
Lucky for you, I'm in charge here. Hell, I'm practically the president. You, you're a weakling. It's a miracle that you're here. But for what?
A man in my position has no time for what-ifs. For the security of our nation, people in my shoes need to make tough choices and make them quick.
Survive this world, you've got to be, yeah, perfect.
This is definitely lower budgeted. It's an independent film. It's distributed by Troma, which is interesting because they don't have a whole lot of fingerprints of Troma on, even with like logos or the name of the studio or anything. But the fact that Troma is not just doing movies like Surf Nazis Must Die and The Toxic Avengers. Troma, and it has ever since it came about in the 70s, Troma has been a distribution arm, and sometimes they have some decent stuff that they've distributed, or at least stuff that's not just trying to be schlock. Oh, they have a lot of schlock too. You know, they have movies like Sergeant Kabuki Man, NYPD, and A Nymphoid Barbarian and Dinosaur Hell. I mean, you have those drive-in type favorites, or even not even drive-in. They're more direct-to-video stuff you would have found in the 80s. But they also try to do stuff a little bit differently, and they sometimes distribute that kind of stuff. And I think that's neat because Friend of the World is not a schlock movie. It is also short. It's only about 50 minutes long, which is, that's a gutsy move to make a film that's 50 minutes long because your distribution options are limited. But in this day and age of streaming, for as much as people get down on streaming, you would never see a film like this were it not for streaming. The movie itself, it's trying to balance between an artistic film and a surreal body horror sci-fi film. And it is limited by its budget. So a lot of it all takes place in this bunker. It's got a very small cast, just basically these two people. And then occasionally you see a couple other warm bodies or not so warm bodies in the background. And it really is that clash of personalities in a stressful situation. I mean, I don't want to dissect it too much, but it is the polar opposites coming to a head, and there's stuff buried in there. I didn't take a deep dive into it, but it's surreal enough, and like I said, it has some body horror elements to it. It has some surreal elements to it. It does not explain itself, which I respect. I like the fact that it's letting you interpret it for what it is. There's a little bit of corny acting, in particular with the guy who plays the soldier. The woman who plays the artist, I think she's got a handle on the acting pretty well. But, you know, it does have wrinkles to it. But then again, so did Doctor Strange. You know, just because it's a big budget film doesn't mean it doesn't have wrinkles. And for all the other problems that you're going to fight in an independent film, if all you got is a couple acting and line delivery wrinkles, it's not bad. So, for an interesting movie, you got to remember it's a labor of love put together probably on a shoestring budget. But I'll tell you, if you're looking for something different, check it out. Like I said, you can find it on Tubi, which I love Tubi TV because they got so many options out there, and it's all free. It's all ad supported. So, yeah, I'm going to have to give Friend of the World a Kinda Rocks.
It Kinda Rocks.
Also available in a home cinema, we've got Turning Red and Blacklight on disc. And new on VOD, we've got X, Ambulance, and You Won't Be Alone. And then you can also find The Outfit on Peacock, finally. And that's it. I need to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Firestarter and the new season of Kids in the Hall. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.